the Beef Strategies Group for inviting me to come here and talk. When Rick asked me to talk, I really had no idea what I was going to say because I think this is a topic that's difficult from my perspective as a consultant. But then about 11 o'clock, I got a pretty good idea because Galen basically gave my talk for me. But I do agree with a lot of what he said. I think it's very, very astute. I also need to thank Marty Ropp. This paper came about when he asked me to contribute to an article that he wrote for SimTalk. And what we see, I consult for a number of his member clients, and what we see in the broader industry is a lot of bulls that are fed too hard and a lot of bulls that do get too fat. And so we're not necessarily trying to pick on anybody, but we're trying to provide our experience and how we like to see bulls developed. And so really the topic of this should have been how to get bulls fat enough without ruining their feet, failing the semen test, and melting during the breeding season, because oftentimes these are problems that we experience as bull producers. How many out here are bull producers? Show of hands. Oh, Lord, I'm going to get something thrown at me. How about commercial cattlemen? I think somebody asked that before. Okay, so we got a pretty nice smattering of everybody. I do think the previous speakers did a nice job explaining the data that's out there, and so I'm not going to talk much about data. Honestly, I have very little data in this slide set. But what I'm talking about is how we practically apply development systems from a consulting perspective and try to help producers develop the best set of bulls that we can. Like I said, I'm probably going to offend both seed stock producers and commercial cattlemen alike. I'm kind of equal opportunity that way. But I do want to make sure that I leave you with the opportunity to think just a little bit about how we develop cattle. I don't want to sell an overfat bull. I think we both come at this from different directions, but it's very true. As producers, we do not want to produce a bull that's not going to survive, and we certainly don't want to buy one that's not going to survive. But yet, when we get to the production sale, the bull with 4/10 or more back fat tends to be the $30,000 bull that walks out of the ring and everybody's happy with. So I think the responsibility lies both with the producer and with the consumer to not only produce a bull who will last a long time, breed a lot of cows, but also on the consumer to be willing to look past the fat and to buy that bull who has the opportunity to go out and breed a lot of cows and last a long time for you. And so I guess the question that I want to answer first or give you my opinion on is, what is overfat? And I'm not sure that I have a perfect answer, because I think that really depends on the environment. Obviously, we have producers here from, I would assume, the Intermountain West all the way through the East. And the bull that can survive in the West is not the same as the bull that can survive in the East. That's not to say that making a bull fatter for Illinois is necessarily right. Reserves, and certainly enough for growth and semen production. Unfortunately, as we see with a lot of production systems, the norm is really greater than that. The challenge then that we have as consultants is there is very little practical applied data out there for us to reference. No offense to the people that have done some research in the past. It's very good information, but it doesn't necessarily tell us how we want to develop that bull or how we apply that at the farm level. And so what I'm going to talk about today is mostly field experience and personal observation. I should preface this by saying that we have a production sale as well. We sell about 60 bulls a year. And so what I'm talking about is some of what we're doing at home as well as what I'm doing with my clients. I think the biggest point of the talk I want to give today is that we really need to bring professional feedlot management skills to bull development. Not that we want to feed a bull like a feedlot calf, but we want to treat him when we're bringing him up on feed and when we're managing him the same way as we do with the feedlot, because in the feedlot we are trying to manage rumen health and certainly trying to manage the feet. One of my big beefs, and I guess I should say this in the next couple of slides, but there's a lot of anecdote and a lot of magic out there for developing bulls. I think Dr. Arlington talked about the magic trace minerals, and that's one of the magic solutions, but there's a whole host. There's probably 1,000 different magical solutions to developing bulls, and the problem with these is they do add a lot of cost, but they don't oftentimes improve a lot of performance. And so we really need to be basic, we need to be practical, use on-farm feedstuffs, and try to make this just as efficient as possible while still producing that kind of bull that we want to sell. A few of my beefs, just because I do have the microphone and I can point them out. One of them is bowl tests. Now, bowl tests can be an excellent avenue. I don't want to offend anybody necessarily that runs a bowl test. It can be an excellent avenue to compare genetics, especially for the small and medium-sized producer. But the problem that I see with a lot of bull tests is that we're pushing bulls past their maximum potential for performance, simply trying to make the maximum gain so you can beat your counterpart in the gain test. And that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to allow that bull to express his potential, but not push him past his genetic level for expression. And I already talked about this, I guess, but specialty feed additives, there's way more marketing than science behind a lot of these products. All they do is offer a Band-Aid to poor management and ultimately create a dysfunctional bull. So, again, going back to really basic practical development, I think we can do everything we need to do without spending a lot of extra money. This one is really contentious, and actually two of my counterparts in the company told me I probably should tone this down just a little bit, but I don't think I'm going to, because cell-feeder development, I think, ruins more good bulls than anything else that we do in bull development. Now, that's not to say that you can't put a cell-feeder program together that works, but 90% of the programs I see are very detrimental to the long-term health of bulls because there's no way to control intake. Those bulls have the opportunity to eat 10 pounds. They have the opportunity to eat 30. And they don't eat forage like they should, and I'm going to talk a little bit about forage here in a few minutes. And so what we do is we create an environment that fosters acidosis, basically destroying the rumen and, as the previous speaker talked about, destroying the feet. And along with this, I don't think intake-limiting technologies are effective. They are a substitute for good management, whether that's hand-feeding, TMRs, whatever. And I understand not everybody has the ability to feed a TMR to their bulls. But I don't think there's any way to accurately control intake with any sort of technology, because these big cattle, once they get up on feed, they're simply going to eat through whatever we provide to them. And I won't ask if anybody uses this, because I know that I'll get something thrown at me. Excuse me. So my goals then when I'm putting together a program, first and foremost, is low cost and low risk. We don't want to sacrifice performance or efficiency for cost, but we certainly want to do it without spending too much money. And then we want that program to be relatively low risk, both low risk in terms of feet, rumen health, and long-term production. Obviously, we're looking for a low reproductive failure rate. We can talk a little bit about nutrition here in a few minutes. And then we want to maximize longevity and maximize saleability, because what we're all striving for is that repeat customer that comes back year after year or every other year and buys a bull from us and gives us good reviews. Negative information goes a lot farther than positive. So we're trying to make repeat customers that are always happy. The key challenges and hurdles I see to developing bulls, the first and foremost, and I think we've talked about this a number of times today, is overfeeding, improper feeding, leading to acidosis, founder, and ultimately reduce longevity. There is a segment out there, I think, that underfeeds bulls. Previous speaker really pointed out the impact of trying to feed bulls adequately to produce scrotal circumference, and that's important, but I think it's rare. We do see it some, and I've had a few clients I've worked with to get that corrected, but I think it's pretty rare. The little things are important, and I'm not going to talk much about them because Dr. Arlington did a really good job talking about them earlier. But trace minerals, vitamins, managing body condition are all extremely important. And then keeping the goal in mind. And I'm going to talk about that just a little bit later. But we need to match our environment. Again, Intermountain West versus Illinois, our environment tends to change quite a little bit. So when I'm putting together bull development programs, we're talking about typically four or five different stages. Pre-weaning, oftentimes I don't have a lot of control over that, but I certainly try. And typically this is creep feeding, has a definite impact on age at puberty, was shown to have a definite impact on scrotal circumference, and certainly on weaning and yearling weights. Is it appropriate? I guess that's a decision for everybody to make, and I'm going to have a couple of slides here in a second to show that. Post-weaning development, I think this is the area where we have the most focus, certainly have the most control. After we get that bull into the feedlot or wherever we're feeding them, we can control the ration, control how they're adapted, certainly work them up and down in terms of performance. post-sale pre-breeding, this is an area where I've really spent a lot of time focusing with my member clients, is to make sure that once we got that bull to the sale, if he's got a little extra cover, that we're working him back down before we turn him out to pasture. And I think this has really saved us a lot of angst in terms of how that bull lasts out with the cows. During the breeding season, we don't have a lot of control. Obviously, that bull's going to run with the cows, and sort of what he is what he is, and so we're trying to do everything in the front end to make sure he lasts. And then the fifth, and oftentimes difficult to accomplish, is post-breeding. We sell that bull, and we might talk to the producer about how the bull produced, what the calves look like, did he last, things like that. But we don't oftentimes follow up on the nutrition program, trying to make sure that that guy is feeding that bull the right way the next go-around, because that bull's still growing. You know, he's still growing out to 30 or 36 months of age, and he definitely needs nutrition to accomplish that. But oftentimes we do forget it. Sorry, I'm fighting a cold here. So the first part about development then, of course, is that pre-weaning phase. And I think there are some fetal and calf development things we can talk about. When I was in grad school at Nebraska with Rick, we did a lot of work on fetal programming in terms of heifers. And I think similar to the enhanced fertility in heifers from supplemented dams or whatever we're doing to change the genetic makeup of that calf, I think the same thing probably holds true for the bull calf. No research on that I'm aware of, and maybe we're not looking at any, but there's definitely an importance there, and I think we need to investigate it. Similar question for bulls from early born dams. I had a bull customer of my own bring that up to me. He only wants to buy bulls out of early born heifers. And that got me to thinking, is there something there epigenetically that has an impact on how that bull is producing? And I don't know the answer, but I think that's something else that we need to answer. We do know from research that bulls from older cows have larger yearling scrotals, and this is related to milk production, early life nutrition, so that's definitely important too. This topic is likely one of the first or second most contentious things that we're going to talk about in this creep feeding. And I don't want to belabor the research because we've already talked about it, but testicides determine pre-weaning. Obviously, creep feeding can increase scrotal circumference, and I think it's acceptable if we don't increase fat. But we need to find a way to control creep intake. Otherwise, if those cattle are consuming 12 to 15 pounds creep feed, we're going to make an awfully fat bull before he ever gets weaned, and if we're feeding the heifers along with them, we're going to do the same thing to the heifers. And there is some research, and I can't remember where I saw it. I'd be willing to listen to somebody that could tell me, but the increase in yearling scrotal might be transient. So bulls that were fed to an adequate level, not restricted, versus bulls that were overfed, those bulls that were fed an adequate level before weaning still caught up by the time they reached maturity. And so I think we can get those bulls where we need them to be as long as we're treating them the right way without getting them too fat. My general recommendation for creep feeding to most of my clients is long-term use is generally not recommended. Long-term use, I mean by 90 to 100 days. It's definitely oversold, and it's often rewarded on the auction block. So when you're producing bulls, you got to weigh the value and the drawback to creep feeding. What I recommend is if we're going to use creep feeding, we use it as a weaning tool. About that 2 to 4 weeks before weaning, we'll put the creep feeders out there to give that calf a little bit of feed to get him used to coming to a bunk and eating out of something else other than grass, not a mama. And I think this is useful. I don't think the 900-pound weaning weights are nearly as impressive as they used to be. People have a lot more data out there, and they can sort out bulls by EPDs and genetic testing versus just simply weaning weights. And I'm not sure that increase in scrotal circumference, if we're getting a 40-centimeter scrotal, is that really relevant long-term. And I think you pointed that out earlier, that huge scrotal maybe isn't all that important. So once we get that calf off the creep feeder, we need to adapt him to feed. And I think this is where a lot of us probably struggle. And certainly my clients, we work on this constantly, getting that calf adapted to feed, because getting that calf adapted onto feed, just like we do in the feedlot, is very important. And there's long-term consequences of mismanagement, both in terms of rumen health, foot health, and long-term productivity. Obviously, appropriate ration design is crucial, making sure that we have enough roughage in the ration to maintain rumen health, and then developing the ration system to match the environment. Controlled adaptation and controlled intakes are absolutely critical developing cattle. So when we're working cattle up on feed, we're doing it in stages. Now, you know, we may have four or five different rations to make that happen. The problem is oftentimes bulls are pushed too hard too early because we're trying to gain test them, get every single pound we can out of that calf. And the consequence of that is one of these a pointer? The consequence of that, of course, then is acidosis. As we put cattle on feed, our challenge is we're moving from a forage-based pastoral system to a feedlot diet, and a multi-step ration system is necessary to convert the rumen bacteria from primarily fiber fermenters into starch fermenters. Now, creep feeding might hasten that some, but creep feeds generally, if they're from or developed the right way, are typically high fiber. And so while we're converting some rumen bacteria, we're certainly not getting all the way that we need to be. And so we need to make sure that our rations are designed such that we are reducing fiber in the ration, building up concentrates over a controlled period slowly. The key points to adaptation that I oftentimes see with clients is erratic consumption. We're used to feeding cows. We're used to feeding pre-weaned calves. We're not oftentimes used to feeding these feedlot cattle, and especially bulls, high-intake bulls, they fluctuate a lot in dry matter intake. So you'll see bulls that want to fluctuate 4 or 5 pounds a day, and you can't let them do that. We need to walk that up, pound of dry matter every day or a pound of dry matter every other day. And that's where bunk management training becomes so critical, trying to make sure that we work with these guys to understand how we walk cattle up on feed, how we feed at the same time every day, ration design, etc. And roughage is essential to managing intake. We're controlling the amount of roughage in the ration, working those cattle up, working those cattle down as we need to, and that helps us not only control the rumen environment, but also control intake. And this is where my bias lies. I think hand-fed or TMR-fed ration systems are so much easier to control, and we can make a so much healthier rumen environment and, of course, long-lived bull by using that TMR system over a self-feeder system. So what is acidosis? And I don't want to belabor the point because I think a lot of you in here probably understand it pretty closely. But just to describe it, acidosis develops when carbohydrates are consumed rapidly by unadapted or adapted cattle. So what we find is rumen pH drops below the optimal level, bloat, and acute acidosis, and along with bloat, of course, can cause death. If you look at the feet, and I think as bull consumers, we need to always be looking at the feet in these bulls before you buy them. And I think we've seen some pictures of this before, but if you look at this hoof here, you see these abnormal bands in the foot, and that's an evidence of laminitis. And so at some point in that bull's development, he's experienced some sort of acidotic challenge. Similarly here, we see claw lesions, this corkscrew claw, where that bull is just developing their foot incorrectly. And acidosis can cause both short and long-term impacts, and so not only do these bulls have a problem when they're young, but this problem follows them throughout their lifetime. So as bull consumers, you know, we need to be aware of what that foot looks like, and if you see any evidence of foot trimming on those cattle, I wouldn't buy them, because the chance that bull is going to have problems on down the road is much greater, whether that be from feeding or that be from genetics. And again, this is probably contentious, but I think a hoof trimmer has no place in a well-managed bull operation, because if you have to have the hoof trimmer there, there's something else upstream that we need to fix before we have that problem. So I've talked about some of this before, I think, but feeding to manage the rumen is awfully important. The first thing that we need to look at is increasing the particle size of grains. Another problem with these self-feeder programs oftentimes is we have very finely ground feeds. And these ferment very quickly, they pass very quickly and cause a lot, or produce a lot of acid in a short period of time. So if we have problems, we first look at increasing the particle size of corn, the particle size of milo, whatever you happen to be feeding. We also reduce the particle size of roughage. We have a lot of roughage in these bull rations, and so the problem that we see is the bulls will sort. And if we cut the forage a little finer, we have a lot less problem with sorting. Obviously, adapting cattle to high-concentrate diets, feeding consistently, same time, same amount every day, and utilizing high-fiber energy sources. And I think this is something that's pretty key is trying to make sure that we're using the right feedstuffs that are locally available. Obviously, in this part of the world, distillers' grains, corn gluten feeds are available. They are excellent sources of protein. They're excellent sources of energy, and they change the rumen environment to be much safer. Now, I know there is some argument out there against using those products because of issues with sulfur, issues with softening feet. I've heard everything under the sun, and I think as long as we're careful with them and we use them adequately but not excessively, we can control those problems. Roughage is so essential in these bull development programs. We can control dietary energy and control intake by the amount of roughage that we include, provide great sources of protein. If we include them between 25 and 75% of the ration, you'll catch most of the ration systems I put together. Obviously, this depends on the producer's goals and their customers' preferences. And again, like I said, appropriate particle size is essential. Talking a little bit about the targets then that I have for these development programs is I really want to see that cow wean off about 50 to 60% of her mature weight in calf weight. And if she can't do that, do we want to sell a bull out of her? No, not every year. Obviously, cows have a bad year, but year in, year out, you'd like to see them do that. My development targets are anywhere from 2.5 to 3.25 pounds a day gain. Again, that depends a lot on the environment. And excellent performing bulls will obviously beat those numbers, but they're expressing their potential versus being pushed to exceed their potential. I don't want to belabor this because this is not a nutrition meeting. But net energy for gain in a lot of these systems, anywhere from 50 to 55 NEG. I like to see ration protein at least 13%, if not 14%, because we know that lean gain requires extra nitrogen. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about trace minerals as well here in just a second. I do think the NRC requirements for trace minerals are extremely low, especially for these reproductive programs. I make very heavy use of chelates. We know that they may improve scrotal circumference and certainly semen quality in challenging situations. And as Dr. Arthington pointed out earlier, especially if we have antagonists present, both in the feedstuffs and the water, they will help get around that problem. In my opinion, zinc and copper and I think manganese as well are important for sperm production. So we do focus on those. And there's a number of good products out there, depending on the company that you choose to source those. I don't want to talk a lot about data because it's been talked about, but we do know that organic sources of trace minerals improve semen characteristics. And so my suggested target for these bull development programs, realizing that these are extreme, but what I'm trying to do is overcome imperfections in an imperfect world. I'm looking for about 80 parts per million of total zinc and manganese, with 40 or 50% of that is chelated, and then between 20 and 25 parts per million of copper. And I think this is also critical to develop a high-quality hoof that both lasts in post-weaning, also when the calf gets to pasture. My production targets, I want to create lean growth to achieve 50 or 60, perhaps a little more of mature weight by a year of age, and then continue to gain another 5 to 10% before that first breeding season. Certainly develop minimal fat in the scrotum, and then feed those bulls to express marbling without creating excess fat. And this is difficult because it's hard to feed marbling into a calf that doesn't genetically have it. And so I oftentimes have to work with producers to get the development program set up correctly so we don't create problems, certainly in terms of the testicles. You know, obviously the purpose of the testicle is to keep the scrotum, of the scrotum is to keep the testicle cooler. So if we insulate that scrotum full of fat, we're going to notice problems with semen quality on down the road. And that can even be noted up to 45 days after fat reduction. So we need to work those bulls down after turnout, but we need to give those bulls at least 70, 80 days of work down if they're too fat to get those cows or those bulls back in breeding shape. I think I'm going to skip this for sake of time because it's already been covered. So I guess the question is, why do we get those bulls so fat? The two questions is it buyer perception or is it seller perception that caused us to get them so fat? And I think I would argue that it's really the seller's perception because as I talk to more and more bull buyers out there, they're very savvy. They're using these tools. They're using genetic data. They're using EPD data. And they can see past all that fat that we put on them. So just real quickly, I want to consider two extra scenarios. One, we're either getting a bull to weigh about 1,500 pounds at yearling or 1,200 pounds at yearling, putting a lot of creep feed into that heavier bull, a little less creep feed into the lighter bull, looking for that heavier bull to gain about 4 1/4, lighter bull to gain about 3 1/4. And really, when you boil this all down, the cost of all that unnecessary, in my opinion, condition is about $134 a bull. So basically, we're putting $134 more feed into that bull just to take it off before he gets out in the pasture, because if he's over fat, he's going to lose weight on pasture. Whereas if that bull is good and hard, he might lose a little, but he's going to lose a lot less. And so we know that if we reduce weight during this pre-breeding phase, we can increase semen characteristics, percent modal, normal, and viability of the sperm. But I think this needs to be employed at least 80 days before turnout. Otherwise, we don't have enough time to get the semen back in condition. Post-breeding then, and this is something that's difficult because we don't oftentimes have control of the bulls at this point, but we want to make sure we work with our customers to make sure they're feeding these bulls the right way, because the part of getting that bull to last a long time is making sure he gets in good enough condition before the next breeding season. So having contact with your customers is important. A few management concerns just here to wrap up. Excellent hygiene, pen maintenance is critical, and I wouldn't bring this up other than the fact that we see in some of these bull operations where we don't bed enough, we get more reproductive and system infections because those bulls are in a lot of mud. Not only that, but we also see a loss of feed efficiency. One of the other things I think is really important, and this is becoming more of a problem, is allowing exercise, because we're seeing more and more people start to develop bulls in a dry lot or even in a closed building situation, and those bulls have virtually no exercise. And not only that, but they're also on concrete. And so we're having issues with those bulls testing, we're having issues with those bulls getting too fat and not being hard enough, and then we're having foot issues as a consequence of concrete. So I'm not saying don't do it, but certainly make sure you've got your system set up right to make sure that bull can last. Environmental considerations, bedding is awfully important. Keep bulls off concrete, like I said. And then virgin two-year-olds and fall bulls. I don't know if anybody in here sells virgin twos or falls, but I found a lot of utility in turning those bulls right back on pasture in the summer. If you keep those bulls in the dry lot for 2 years, you have a lot more foot issues than if that calf's out running during the summer, and you make a much better bull. So I think in closing, your development system, make sure you establish a system that fits your environment, know your clientele, have a professional attitude about it, because we are developing a product that's half the genetic pool. I think the commercial cattleman is using EPD and genetic data very effectively. Make sure that we keep reiterating that. A problem-free bull will earn you a lot more loyalty than a high-performing sire, and a bull refund program is not customer service. Thank you.